Welcome to episode 183 of the Formula One Grid Talk podcast. Today we are here to preview the 2022 Australian Grand Prix. My name is Ruby Price and joining me today we have Tom Downey from Everything F1.
Hello.
Jawa Jakub from Hit the Apex podcast.
Hello.
And Ray from Every Ray Day Motorsport.
Hello.
Hello. First, if you enjoy this podcast, we would love it if you could take five to leave us a five-star rating on Spotify or a five-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll shout out all of you who do to say thanks. And if you're one of the 74% of people who aren't yet subscribed to the YouTube channel, please consider helping us out with a like and a subscribe. So that's right. Australia is back for 2022, and long has it been missed. Whilst we're used to seeing this staple circuit open the Formula One calendar, the 3.8-mile circuit, I'm reading the wrong line. That's great. This year, we arrive in Melbourne for round three of the championship, and we still don't know who the favourites are to take the crown at the end of the season. But first, let's start off with a bit of news. Returns are in full swing, as earlier this week, it was announced that the 2023 will see Formula One race in Las Vegas. The 3.8-mile circuit around the Vegas Strip will be the third race in the USA next season, alongside Miami and COTA, and interestingly, will be held on a Saturday night. So, Jawad, Saturday night race. Formula One is a global sport, and I'm sure being an Aussie, you're already used to some pretty crazy time schedules. You know, how do you see people responding to this big change? You know, the last Saturday race we had in Formula One was the 1985 South African Grand Prix.
I certainly hope they respond positively. Obviously, as you mentioned, there is let's call it a minority of people, strong minority of people all over the world and in this part of the world that do have to watch Formula One, the sport that they love at such strange times and whatnot. We actually here benefit from the Saturday night race there because it's on, I think, at 4 p.m. in the afternoon for us on a Sunday. So it still feels like Grand Prix Sunday for us, even though it will be Saturday night. But it's truly, I guess, you know, when you think of it as a world championship, you know, you want to go to other venues all over the world, explore new cities or continents, you know, hopefully, you know, we can explore other continents that haven't been on the championship for a while as well in the future. But for Liberty Media, such a big tick, given the fact that, you know, they wanted to increase the sports presence in the US and now they've got a third race happening from next year. So I hope certainly we get a positive reaction. I've always said I'm not a fan of, you know, expanding the calendar too much, you know, because it's just going to become such a load for the crews and the staff that travel with the sport and the teams. So, you know, I just hope, yeah, we get a good first race. They're only on a 3-year deal as well. So if it doesn't work out, then yeah, obviously they can put that one in the dustbin.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you as well about expanding the calendar so much whilst also, you know, claiming to be moving forward with making Formula One and eco, I don't want to say friendly, but at least neutral sport, whilst at the same time this season, you know, they travel to America on three separate occasions across the year, you know, when there's obviously reasons behind it, such as, you know, weather and climate, but you know, have them all together if you're going to do that. But yeah, expanding the calendar is quite the task that Limited Media have got, and it seems to be something that they are absolutely doing. But Tom, Jawa touched on this a little bit. You know, we've heard before that Formula One has struggled to crack America. Do you think that this time, obviously, there's three races happening next season, have they finally done it?
I think I've wanted to begun to do it even before we had sort of this talk of additional races in America. If you look at Austin from last year, right, look at how big the crowds were, look at how many people were there, you know, look at how sort of well populated that event was. Obviously helped by Martin Brundle's running with that rapper lady on his grid walk. F1 is definitely growing in America, and it has been growing steadily for the last couple of years. Sometimes, maybe to me, it seems a bit not, I don't say like Americanized because that's very stereotypical, but it seems like it's got a lot more sort of theater around it, or it's got a lot more sort of pantomime, maybe. It's like there was one year when they had Vettel and Hamilton walking out sort of like either side of the trophy. And all I was waiting for, you know, I think the only thing we was really missing was like Randy Orton coming out and trying to, you know, KO one of them or something. But it was, hopefully it's a good thing. And Vegas, you know, it is one of those sort of like iconic things. You know, having seen the circuit, would it present the best racing? I don't know. It's going to be pretty flat, because I've been to Vegas. It is relatively flat. You know, unless the pit lane goes through the Grand Canyon or something, I don't really see how it's going to, how it's going to have too much elevation change. But in terms of the sort of commercial event, much like places like Monaco, we've got Miami coming up. It's going to do good for the sport, I think, because it's going to bring more people to Vegas. Yeah, okay, they're probably not going to sit in the casinos, you know, with their credit cards sort of affixed to the machines. But it hopefully will do good for the sport. It'll do good for F1, which is beginning to sort of lay down some roots in America. Plus, obviously, with Haas being an actual American team, not a Russian team like they were last year, and the talks of Andretti maybe, with Andretti at some point coming into F1, just a question of how he's coming into F1. It's going to grow. It is growing and it is doing well for F1. Whether Vegas is the best race, I don't know, but Formula One can't just appease the sort of diehard, somewhat elitist old school fans who are like, oh my God, it's Spa or nothing. You know, there are good modern circuits out there. So they have to please everyone, and it's going to bring money. Ultimately, a race like this is going to bring money into the sport, which is going to keep circuits like Spa, Silverstone, Monza going.
Yeah, a very, very good point. It has been said a lot of times, but cash is king. And to fund a sport like this, you need cash, which is where a lot of interesting sponsorship deals come from. But Ray, just a last touch on Las Vegas. You know, we were expecting a sort of car park circuit when, you know, it was all teased, but this is more of a tour of Las Vegas, you know, with like the circuit taking drivers past all sorts of landmarks like casinos, MSG Sphere Arena, Paris Las Vegas Resort, and of course the Caesars Palace Hotel. Tom touched on this a little bit. It will probably be a particularly flat circuit, but tell me, what do you expect from the 2023 Las Vegas Grand Prix?
What do I expect about the race? I think the first thing I'll probably expect is ticket prices will be very expensive, because we are talking about Las Vegas here, and you know, it's not a cheap area. It's definitely not easy to close the roads because it's a night race. So Singapore is also a night race. It's really quite expensive to actually close the roads. And, you know, with all the lighting infrastructure you're going to have to install, it's not going to be cheap. And I think when it comes to, like, you know, the tourists, I think it's going to do a lot for Las Vegas. Like, the Singapore Grand Prix actually did a lot for tourism in Singapore. And every year we actually have a lot of tourists coming in just for the race. So much so that they actually renewed it, you know, once again after, you know, COVID started to, you know, get a bit better worldwide. So I think it will actually, you know, benefit Las Vegas greatly. And in terms of the racing, like Tom said, we don't know if it's going to be good or bad. You know, I think fingers crossed that, you know, with the current new cars that we have, so far the racing has been pretty good. And, you know, fingers crossed that it will continue to be good in 2023. And, you know, while Vegas may be a flat circuit, hopefully we'll get something, some kind of action, somehow like we see in Baku.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm envisioning something a bit Baku-ish as well, in terms of, you know, street circuit walls, very tight and twisty in some sections. And that 2 kilometer straight, I think it, no, not 2 kilometer, 2 mile straight, however long that straight is, that's going to either see some great racing or it's going to see DRS. And we've had a lot to talk about with DRS, but just one last thing on the news as well. I think I speak for everyone when I'm going to extend F1 Grid Talks, you know, love and support to the family of Max Mosley, who passed this week. It's, you know, a name that is synonymous with Formula One. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we have to talk about this kind of thing. But as I say, the love and support to Max Mosley's family from Formula One Grid Talk. But yeah, Moving back on to Australia then. So, Jawad, since slightly different Australian circuit, they've done a lot of reprofiling. They've changed some of the corners and stuff, which were planned for last season, but we didn't quite get it because of COVID. What do you expect to see this weekend coming up?
Don't know what I'm expecting. I'm hoping that it'll be a lot more exciting. So over the last few years, in particular with the previous era of car, a lot of the criticism of Albert Park was that overtaking was not really a thing that was seen, and the races were boring, yada yada. But we've had, you know, such great action so far in the first couple of races with this new generation of car. See how two cars can fight, and when one passes, the other one has a chance of getting back past, you know, pretty much straight away rather than having to wait the next lap or, you know, the tires are gone and whatnot. Most of the corners, they have actually widened them, which is good to see there. They've changed some of the camber as well. We've gotten rid of the turn 9 and 10 chicane too. So it's effectively a curved straight. And then they're talking about possibly even having a fourth DRS zone. So, you know, get our heads around that being a thing. So, you know, given the fact that these changes, like you said, were planned for last year and for the previous generation car, I think with the new car this year, it's only going to make Albert Park great, you know, a great spectacle. And, you know, I'm obviously gutted that it's not the first race of the year like we're used to it, but you know, it's so good to see it back. The atmosphere you can feel in the city and everything, that people are excited, and the fact that it's sold out as well. I think it's the first time in more than a decade that they've actually sold out all your weekend tickets as well. So again, that is that influence that, you know, Tom talked about with Austin being sold out, not necessarily because of American fans, but just because of how exciting the championship has been the last couple of years. And we've got such a great battle on our hands at the moment between Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc. So Albert Park is going to be a buzz come Thursday, Friday this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, 2 years without it on the calendar, and it has certainly been missed, you know. I always imagine, you know, waking up at early o'clock in the UK to miss half of the Australian Grand Prix because I inevitably fall asleep because I'm not used to the clocks changing. But Tom, you know, how much is Formula One needed to be back in Australia, do you think?
I think to say needed to be back in Australia, you know, maybe not needed, but I think it is great that they are going back there. You know, it's the first home race that Danny Ric is going to have had for 2 years. It's mad to think that the last time he had a home race, it was his first race since he left Red Bull, because it was his first year with Renault. Yeah, I know. You know, it's like trying to wrap your head around that one. It's just like that puts into perspective how long it's been, because he was 2019. The last time we raced there. But no, it's good that everyone's going there. You know, as Jared sort of touched on, there were some changes to the circuits, many widening corners, getting rid of that sort of fast left-right, which is turn 9-10. I actually quite like that section, playing it on this one game, but I also used to just have to yeet it straight across the grass. And this is why I'm not a professional driver. But yeah, no, it's you know, it's good, because F1 is a global sport and, you know, it needs to be in pretty much each continent. I mean, I don't think we'll have a race in the Antarctic anytime soon. But you know, to have something back in that sort of Oceania region is only a good thing. And, you know, it does feel a bit weird not having Australia open the calendar this year. I mean, aside from, you know, 2019, 2020, obviously, when the seasons were somewhat curtailed, I think the last time we didn't have Australia open a quote-unquote regular season was, what, 2012, 2011, something around then. As far as my memory could recall, it's always gone Australia, Bahrain, and then China, or Australia, China, Bahrain, sort of that, you know, that grouping of races. No, it's good. I'm looking forward to going back there. Obviously, it's nice for our for our somewhat more easterly based colleagues such as Jared and Ray that they can watch a race at a respectable hour and make us Europeans suffer. I'm going to be sitting there at the TV with that cocktail sticks in my eyes to hold my eyelids open. Try and make sure I get off Call of Duty nice and early the night before so I can get a good sleep in. It's good. It's a decent track, not necessarily had the best races recently. I think the sort of like the biggest thing I can remember recently was when Alonso had that huge impact in 2016 with, I think it was Gutierrez in Haas's first race. Aside from that, I haven't really sort of, I can't remember the last time we had a proper sort of banger there. But regardless, it'll be good to get back there. It's nice to get these sort of, after so many years of turmoil effectively with the F1 calendar, it's nice to be getting back to Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think one of the things as well, Ray, that's going to make this Australian Grand Prix is the fact that, they are bringing back the spectacle of the Australian Grand Prix. Like, it's more of a matter of, as Tom has mentioned, historically, it's not really been known for the best racing, but it's been known for the association of the start of the season. One of the things as well that I think is going to work for it is the returning to Australia aspect of it. But really, we've seen this season that cars can follow and race. And I think that has the potential to make this Australian Grand Prix something of a hopefully classic, touch wood.
I agree. Yeah, I think, it could be a classic because this is the first time I think, we are going to a circuit, in Asia for some time. Or rather to the eastern part of the world for some time. And it's probably one of those, mainstay tracks that haven't exactly been the most exciting, with the current with previous generation of cars. So I think there'll be a lot of eyes to see, how effective the new technical regulations are and, allowing cars to overtake and race. Like I said, it previously overtaking, wasn't always a really good thing in Australia. Action wasn't always there. But yeah, if the cars can race well in Australia, I think, some of the more tighter circuits like Singapore or, maybe even Monaco, we will know that, that these races will probably be more exciting than, how they were like in the previous era of F1.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the new regulations so far appear to have worked. And, if we can, even speculating that we can see actual legitimate overtakes in Monaco, that's going to be pretty, I think it's something that circuit, and especially based on its recent reputation, will need. But anyway, sticking with Australia, let's start talking about some cars. Ferrari currently leading the championship, Joad. They got one win, four podiums. We expected it going into the season after testing, but they are absolutely here and they are currently sort of just dominating, but that's also down to the unfortunate demise that Red Bull had in Bahrain. But this is Ferrari's championship, I would say, right now. Do you think they're going to capitalize on that?
Certainly, yes. Still a bit too early to say because Ferrari do often fall into habit of not being able to string together the entire season. They'll make it to kind of the midway point and then drop off, as we've seen in previous seasons when Sebastian Vettel was fighting Lewis Hamilton. But Australia is somewhere they've been successful for quite a number of years. Even going back to Sebastian Vettel when he was there at Ferrari, won in 17 and 18 back to back. There's such a strong, almost Tifosi like following in Melbourne in particular for Ferrari as well. So, you'll probably see more or as much red as you would see orange for Daniel Ricciardo. So, it's definitely somewhere that I can see them put their foot down. I would like to see Carlos Sainz have a better weekend, or, you know, a version of what he thinks is a better weekend. You know, he obviously doesn't feel like he's on the same level as his teammate at the moment, but, you know, that's also just the brilliance of Leclerc, you know, having spent 2 years not being able to compete for wins and for the pointy end of the grid. We're seeing this really, really strong Leclerc out, and, you know, Max is going to have his hands full if can't get it together this weekend. And Albert Park has typically been a circuit in the hybrid era, which Red Bull haven't really succeeded at. I think they've only had one podium since 2014, which came at the last race we had in 19 with Max, which was the first podium for a Honda powered car as well. So, you know, that record doesn't speak very kindly of them, but, you know, they're going to have to do a bit of work to turn that around. But yeah, Ferrari very much looking the favorites.
Yeah, absolutely. And Tom, I can't believe I'm still saying this after all of the trouble that we had. I say we, that they had, you know, pre-season, but Mercedes currently P2 in the constructors. I know it's not likely to last for much longer unless they, these upgrades that they're supposedly bringing to the Australian Grand Prix, you know, fully switch on the car. You know, they're bringing a new floor, I think it is, and they'll obviously be making other upgrades as well. You know, do you see them being able to claw back this gap that they've got this weekend?
Nah, basically. No, they've got... There's something fundamentally not quite right with that Mercedes car. I don't know if it's... You know, obviously, I'm not an engineer, but, you know, not a F1 engineer anyway. I don't know if it's just the aero or if it's the package of the aero and the power unit, or if it's the power unit packaging. Oh, I don't know what it is. But if you look at that car, when it's going around... You know, it just doesn't have the grunt and the sort of precision that you've come to expect from Mercedes over the last, what, 7-8 years now. You know, if you look at their cars from like 2020, even last year, you know, the car was, you know, which was sort of somewhat curtailed by the regulation changes. The car still, like, you know, turned on a sixpence, and they, you know, they had incredible speeds, you know, on circuits which had long straights, all the rest of it. But yeah, Mercedes have been quite badly affected by these 2022 regulations, I'd say. You know, if you look at the way that the car is, you know, effectively twerking all the way down these, like, long straights and stuff, it's just, they just haven't got their head around it. And I, you know, unless they bring a sort of fundamental redesign, I don't know how, you know, how well they're going to hold on. They're not going to keep P2 in the constructors. I think it's safe to say that Red Bull will overtake them pretty damn soon. And it was only Red Bull's misfortune that gave Mercedes that position in the first place. But like I always say on these podcasts, you play the hand you were dealt, and both Red Bulls just conked out in front of the Mercedes. So it's a golden opportunity. You take it, obviously. But it doesn't tell the entire story, because the Red Bull, you know, Ferrari are 13 to beat this year. We can see that. And Red Bull are pretty damn close behind them. I would argue that Mercedes are better than the rest this year, and I don't see them catching up to... I don't see that, you know, maybe they'll get closer to Red Bull. I could be completely wrong. And in a few weeks, I could be on this podcast sitting here going, well, bugging me sideways, wasn't I wrong? Look at Mercedes, woohoo, here we go again. But from what we've seen so far, I just can't see it coming. I cannot see that happening, because there just seems to be such a deficit between them and the top two teams that, yeah, they're just, you know, soon they're going to be, I reckon they're going to be sort of like 70 points behind or something, you know, after a couple of races. And you know, they're just going to, you know, even if they do bring all the upgrades in the world, we saw how much effort that took last year for them. And this year, they're just, you know, they're starting with one hand tied behind their back, effectively. So it's just, I just don't see how they're going to make up all that difference and what they're going to change. You know, call me a cynic, and obviously I am a Red Bull fan, but you know, please take this with a pinch of salt. It is nice. Nice is not the right word, but to see another team at the top is... hello. Sorry, my cat's just walked in. And I just heard a squeak from behind me. It is nice to... nice isn't the right word again. It's good for F1 that we have a different team at the top who has become the team to beat. In fact, I'll describe it as much like a kind of Red Bull, it's refreshing. So I just don't see how Mercedes are going to get that far up the field this year. And I'm going to shout that.
I have never heard anybody describe a kind of Red Bull as refreshing.
No, I think sickly is the word.
Speaking of Red Bull then, Ray, Red Bull obviously P3 at the minute in the constructors, but as we've mentioned three times already, you know, it's because they had that double DNF in Bahrain, but you know, that's what the stats will say at the end of the season. But we know that they're going to be competitive in terms of the top two teams this weekend. However, as I think it was Jawa that pointed out, they've not historically done well in the hybrid era of Formula One at Albert Park. Do you think that this time things will be different?
I'm thinking it could be different, but you know, I think the thing to be concerned about with Red Bull is the reliability, because ever since Red Bull took over, you know, in the sense from Honda on the engine side, things haven't been so good. In fact, it's actually been somewhat reminiscent of the McLaren Honda days where we had Yuki Tsunoda break down on the formation lap in Saudi Arabia. And if memory serves me correctly, the same thing happened in Bahrain. So there's a concern about reliability. It's not because you can have a fast car, but if you don't have reliability, you're not going to win anything. It's not about being the fastest, but also having the reliability to finish the race, because, you know, as we saw in Bahrain, it just wasn't there. So I'm thinking if Red Bull can somehow, you know, make the changes within the 2 weeks they had between Saudi Arabia and Australia, you know, they could do something to the engine side to fix the reliability gremlins. I think Red Bull are well placed, you know, to put up a strong fight in Australia and hopefully do well and end their rotten streak of.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we saw in 2012 with McLaren, who arguably had the fastest car of the season, they had horrible reliability. And, you know, at the end of the day, they didn't beat Red Bull for that season. But yeah, on to P4, Jawad, Alpine. A lot has been said about the way that they handled their race strategy between their two drivers last race. You know, should they have been allowed to race each other in certain times of the Grand Prix? But, you know, how do you see them moving forward this weekend?
They're in a good position. They seem competitive enough, and especially when you've got other teams behind them as well. I personally enjoyed watching Alonso and Ocon go at each other. Not that it mattered for Alonso in the end with that DNF, but, you know, Ocon getting his elbows out, you know, being a bit more, let's say, cleaner about his racing and overtaking as well at the moment. So it's hard. You know, we could talk about the entire midfield and, you know, still not come to a conclusion about who's there. You know, Mercedes definitely seem, like you guys said, definitely seem to be at the top of that pile. But I don't feel like Alpine have a car that's quick enough to be where they are at the moment, but they're there on circumstance and the fact that, you know, they've had some points finishes, which has been good for both cars. And then, of course, just Ocon in the previous race. How they'll go this weekend, you know, that's to see how it all shapes up. And, you know, once we get first practice underway, we'll get a read at who's quick. You know, if you qualify in the top 10 here, that's amazing. Good job. Well done. You know, that could potentially be where you finish during the race if there's no overtaking. But, you know, as we've seen, these guys, they're Alonso and Ocon in particular, aren't afraid to get their elbows out and will put on a bit of a show. And that's what I'm kind of hoping for.
Yeah, absolutely. We really want a show. And also one of the things that I am kind of looking forward to with the Alpines in Australia is I'm not going to look at their car and immediately think Racing Point, because they're going to the actual livery for the season as opposed to the Middle Eastern special, which was just the whole pink BWT. And whilst I like it, I look at that car and I see Racing Point because, you know, that's just what I see. But it's going to be nice to be thinking, hey, that's Alpine rather than a car that hasn't been on the grid for two seasons.
It definitely looks a lot better with the pink accents and whatnot, rather than just being all pink. Having that pink and blue combination looks a lot more better, I'll admit. So that'll be good to see too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Tom, onto a car as well that also looks a lot better this season than I was expecting. The Haas is really performing, it seems. You know, they've got Kevin Magnussen in, who has clawed 12 points for a team that, you know, didn't even score that many points in the last two seasons combined. They've really sort of, obviously, there was a whole other aspect in play, but they've really played a blinder with getting Kevin Magnussen back in that car.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to see K-Mod back in the car, and you know, having both him and Hülkenberg sort of chatting to each other in the last two races was quite funny as well. After they offered an encounter with each other in Hungary in 2017, I'm going to leave it at that. It's done good for Haas. Not just in the sense that they've got a good driver with a, you know, a sort of decent track record in F1, you know, scored a podium on his debut for McLaren at Australia, nonetheless. It's just a whole aura around the team. They just seem so happy and just vibing and just, yeah, everything's Gucci. And, you know, because if you looked at them when Mazepin, et cetera, were there last year, the whole team felt like had this sort of horrible, like, deathly weight to it, and just it was just awful. It just felt like a horrible place to be, and you know, the car was awful, and you know, Mazepin Senior was starting to put his money and all the rest of it. But having K-Mac back in now into a car that has to put their resources into, having a decent driver in a decent car, he's teaching Mick. The whole team looks happy. Everybody's getting good results. Mick will get points soon. He was on for a decent quali in Saudi Arabia until he had that pretty horrific accident. You know, it's good to see that he is back up and he's fit and fighting and he's walking around all the rest of it. Sensible decision, I think, by Haas on multiple fronts to not race, because he'd have just been, you know, he was just, yeah, you know, finances, all the rest of it. But having K-Mag back in that car, it is nice to see him back. I think there's maybe a sense of almost unfinished business, or you know, perhaps not quite unfinished business, but he somewhat left F1 too soon. And to have Haas back scoring points, if you'd have told us last year or the year before that Mercedes would be battling on track, for position with Haas, and that Haas would be coming out on top, you'd have told people to get in the bin or something, because it's like there's no way on earth that would have happened. But Haas have, you know, they're like a phoenix that has risen from the ashes. They've taken the new regulations in their stride. Both drivers are doing well. The team is happy. They are, you know, they are firmly back in the midfield and back where they should be. And it's just so nice to see them back and doing well.
Yeah, absolutely. Mercedes had to sort out their gremlins and Haas have had to sort out their Kremlins. And I came up with that whilst you were talking. I couldn't resist.
I like that. That's good.
Thank you. Ray, on to Alfa Romeo, who also seem to be doing, you know, rather well this season compared to where they were last season. You know, they've got a car that works. The Ferrari power unit is delivering. And that could also be another, you know, example as to why the Haas is doing really well. But, you know, as we've mentioned, Australia is a bit of an interesting circuit. How do you see Alfa Romeo performing this weekend?
I would expect Alfa Romeo to have a pretty solid weekend. You know, they've demonstrated some pretty good performance over the past few races. But there's one thing I think, you know, we need to keep on the lookout, which is the gearbox and the transmission, because they've been, in the past two races, we have had both drivers having problems with Joe dropping from his starting grid position all the way to the back of the field because of Andy Stoll. I think that's something that, you know, Alfa Romeo will need to get on top of ASAP, because these kind of issues is the kind of issues that will affect their you know, result, because they have the car that, you know, can deliver results. But if they can't fix these issues, it's going to drag them down. And we have to look on the operation side of things as well. I think it's, you could say that, you know, Alfa Romeo haven't exactly been on top on being, you know, at the top of the game operational wise since last season. You know, we saw all kinds of errors from the team. And that happened once again in Saudi Arabia, where, you know, Joe had to serve an extra penalty because they didn't serve the penalty correctly the first time around. So I think Alfa Romeo has to, you know, reflect, you know, on what's gone on the past couple years on the ops side and, you know, on the software side of things. You know, if not, I think it's going to be, I would say it's disappointing, you know, because they are performing better than we expect. But I think, you know, it's just not going to be such a great result from a performance standpoint, because they are actually wasting the car's potential.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as you mentioned, having to do a penalty again because you didn't serve it correctly, it's a bit amateurish, but, you know, they'll take it as a learning experience. I'm fairly certain they'll never do that again, because imagine being the first, possibly the first team in history to, like, you know, just not do a penalty properly, you know, more than once in a season. Yeah, you'd hate to be that team. But Jawed, moving on to AlphaTauri, obviously Pierre Gasly had a horrible Bahrain. Yuki Tsunoda, I think, scored points, and they're currently sitting on 8 points in the championship and P7 ahead of three teams. Obviously, last season, you know, we saw Pierre Gasly consistently fighting for, you know, like P6, P7, P5. Do you think that they've got the tools at the minute to be fighting for these positions? Do you think they're going to be competitive this weekend in Australia?
They've certainly got the tools. It's the reliability that concerns me, and the problem that Pierre Gasly had in Bahrain resurfaced with Yuki Tsunoda in the last race. So what's next? You know, is that something that, you know, the Red Bull family altogether have had a look at, you know, after the first two races? What's going on with the power unit side? Like, you know, what we were saying earlier as well, has it kind of slipped into how it was with their partnership with the Honda partnership with McLaren? Because that could potentially derail not only Red Bull's campaign, but then AlphaTauri as well, who, like you say, they are great, you know, on the days that they're great. Pierre Gasly, such a consistent performer, qualifying in the top 10, getting to Q3, and then just being in the points, you know, often being, you know, that fourth quickest car on race day. And then for Tsunoda, after being so inconsistent last year, the hope was that this year he'd be able to hit the ground running and be able to put in those performances to not, you know, let's say beat Gasly as such, but, you know, to be there or thereabouts and to be able to stay out of the walls and to not damage the car, not be as erratic as we saw at times last year. And, you know, we certainly saw a glimpse of that there in Bahrain where he finished eighth. But yeah, you know, so far both cars haven't finished the race together, or the two races we've had so far. So they'll be just hoping that, you know, if they can start the race even this weekend, not have what happened last time out, but to just bring both cars to the checkered flag. And if they score points, then that's great.
Yeah. The one thing that any of the Red Bull powertrain cars need this season is just consistency race to race. I think, you know, like you say, AlphaTauri just need both cars finishing the race at this point. Tom, on to McLaren, and what a kind of sad story it is for them, but Lando Norris got some points out last time around. Is this the start of, you know, a untimely resurgence? You know, obviously no one saw McLaren fighting over you know, the last points position to be happening this season. What do you think is going to happen? Danny Ricciardo's got his first home race as well, as we've mentioned.
Yeah. No, I don't think this is a salvo resistance for McLaren, unfortunately. I think that car does have some bigger issues than they perhaps first realised. I was very hopeful for McLaren coming into this year, so I'm sure a lot of us were, especially after a pretty damn good 2020 and 2021. But they seem to have taken a few steps back, unfortunately. As to whether... you know, I know Lando got points last time out in Saudi. He did have a bit of fortune his way in the sense that there were two cars in front of him that retired, if not more, I can't quite remember. But, you know, it made his position somewhat overinflated. He still had a good drive in the first place to get his car there. But McLaren... Oh boy, this is going to piss some people off. McLaren are fighting with one hand tied behind their back. And that proverbial hand is Daniel Ricciardo.
I can't believe you're saying this ahead of the Australian Grand Prix.
I know, and I can feel Jared this burning into my, you know, this retina's burning into the back of my skull. Danny Rick hasn't been the same ever since he left Red Bull. You know, he started to get somewhere at Renault and he showed some glimpses of it last year. He had some good races, but we've seen far too much of him being so not inconsistent, but just behind his teammate. You know, not getting out in Q1. Not getting out of Q1, you know, not making it to Q3, finishing outside the points many times. You know, yes, I know he won in Monza, and that was an example of when he'd had a good weekend all around. Excuse me. Sorry, I've got hiccups. But that was a, you know, contrary to what Netflix want you to believe, that wasn't like he was reborn. That was almost like a false dawn. I'm sorry, I'm spitting bare bars here, but you know, it's just because McLaren haven't got two drivers who are like, you know, sort of like not even right up there, but like consistently in the points all the time. If you look at Carlos Sainz, if you look at what he did when he was at McLaren, bearing in mind he was there in 2019 when they were, you know, when they were slowly getting there, and then 2020, you know, started to really get up there, and the team got up there. And then if you look at what he's doing with Ferrari now and what he was doing last year as well, you know, always just there, always just about in the points, you know, consistent, nothing sort of like, you know, nothing to some, you know, quote unquote thrown home about, but was always doing a good job. And McLaren are missing that with Danny Ric. You know, maybe he's past it. Maybe, you know, maybe he's never quite adopted to driving out of the Red Bull, because obviously, you know, each car has a different dynamic, all the rest of it. But just, he's not going to be helping McLaren, and McLaren are going to struggle to move forward if they don't have two drivers who are consistent. I'm not saying that they, you know, that they're going to be, that they need to be consistent podium contenders every week, because realistically, they're not going to be. They need to build their way up. But you know, we've seen it enough times with them now where, sorry, I've got something in my eye as well. It's all going on today. You know, we've seen it time and time again with him where he'll just, you know, just things just don't quite click. And, you know, I don't know if it's an issue with the braking, because, you know, as we know, he was king of the late breakers, especially in that Red Bull. Some of those dive bombs he did, bloody hellfire, they gave me anxiety. But just, you know, when he's in the Renault, just didn't quite get it. And then with McLaren, he just, you know, he just doesn't seem to. Something isn't clicking. I don't know. You know, maybe it's up. You know, maybe it's up there with him or what. I don't know. I'm not a psychiatrist. But McLaren needs to think about the future, because losing third place to Ferrari last year in the constructors cost them in more ways than one. And I think Danny Rick's contract is up at the end of this year. Possible award is knocking on the door. We're talking about the expansion into America. Just saying.
Tom Downey predicts Daniel Ricciardo not at McLaren next season. Right. Moving on to the Aston Martins, who are currently having a bit of a horrible season, but you know, they've got Sebastian Vettel coming back for this weekend. He's historically done very well around Albert Park. Do you think this is what Aston Martin needs, like giving the new a new boost and a fresh boost to the team after obviously missing one of their two drivers with COVID? And also, do you think, you know, we heard a lot of complaints from Lance Stroll last time out about how horrible the car was. Do you think there's any chance that they might have fixed some of those issues?
I think, you know, it's definitely a boost for the team that Seb is coming back. You know, I think the team probably uses Seb a lot. You know, I think Seb is a very popular driver for a reason. And I'm quite sure that the reasons why the fans love him is also the reason why the team likes him a lot. So him coming back would definitely be a motivational boost for the whole team, I feel. But when it comes to the car, I can't really say so many good things, because if you look at it, you know, Aston Martin, even though while they were forced in India, you know, they were brilliant, you know, they basically maximized their budget. But, you know, if you notice, ever since, you know, Lawrence Stroll has taken over the team, on the technical side of things, you know, I feel like the team hasn't really performed so well. I mean, we saw how last year's AMR 21 didn't do very well because of the, you know, technical changes they introduced. And the team was just lost throughout the year. They were trying to figure out what's wrong with the car, but, you know, they just couldn't figure it out. And with the AMR 22, it's the exact same problem again. And, you know, this isn't like, Aston Martin doesn't have the same kind of technical ability as Mercedes. You know, Mercedes could, you know, salvage the, I think it was the W12 last year, to, you know, to actually contend for the championship, you know, despite it being affected by the aero regulations. But, you know, Aston Martin couldn't do that same thing with the AMR 21. So I really don't have much confidence that the team could turn things around in just 2 weeks, considering they couldn't even fix last year's car, you know, within half the year. So I'm not really positive about, you know, Aston Martin in Australia. But, you know, I really do hope that Seb just, you know, gets some points as comeback, because I think it will be a huge boost to the team as well as, you know, to himself.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, having that a good performance on your comeback obviously gives you momentum, and that's absolutely what Aston Martin need right now. Just something going forward. But a team who, you know, are definitely struggling, I would say, this season, possibly one driver a bit more than the next, but Jawad, Williams, P10, you know, we hope that the 2022 regulations will be the end of Williams's battles for no points. But currently so far, that doesn't seem to be the case. Is there anything that you think, like, we can pinpoint that on, or is it just a matter of unfortunate circumstances and, you know, just not having the best luck?
It would be just easy to say it's an unfortunate circumstance of the Mercedes power unit at the moment. As we know, all the Mercedes power teams are struggling and whatnot. And, you know, Williams have taken on a few more of Mercedes components from the factory team this year. But look at Haas, you know, they've turned around their fortunes, having not developed last year's car at all. They had all that extra wind tunnel and CFD time that they got as a result of being last in the championship, like Williams had as well, you know, being second last or whatever. So there shouldn't really be excuses in that instance. I think as well, the drivers probably need to step up their game too. I know for Alex Albon, it's only, what, third race back since having a year out of F1, but the expectation was on him, you know, to replace, you know, in replacing George Russell, that he would be giving similar performances as we saw with Russell. And unfortunately, that hasn't really come to fruition yet. Poor Nicholas Latifi had a pretty horrible weekend last time out. And, you know, I feel like there's got to be a bit more pressure put on him too, given the fact that, yeah, Williams should be a team that could easily be fighting with Haas and with Alfa Romeo 4 points this year. If they're going to be out of that points battle once we get a quarter of the way through the season, then I see no hope for them to come back later on. And given the fact that, you know, they've done a complete restructure of their technical departments, you know, Jos Capito pretty much oversees everything. He's got his deputy there in FX Demazon as well. It's got to work, and they can't say, oh, you know, we don't have resources, we don't have the cash anymore, because that's all there for them. So similar to Aston Martin, you know, they've got everything at their disposal. It's how they use it now, utilize it to be able to get the results, and also the organic piece that sits behind the wheel has to the driver has to also have the input as well. And I can't really predict anything good for Williams this weekend. I'm sure, you know, one or both cars will drop out in Q1, and then they'll be, you know, finishing outside the points. But that's not definitely not what I expected for Williams coming into 22 after the last couple of years that they've had.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a unfortunate situation to be watching them after, you know, they were clawing themselves back up after some horrible seasons. And I mean, I know we're only two races in, but, you know, seeing them at the bottom again is really disheartening. But, you know, we've covered the grid now. Let's have a look at some predictions. So, Tom, who's on that top step this weekend?
Charles Leclerc.
Charles Leclerc.
Yep.
Cool. Ray, who's going to be on top for you?
Charles Leclerc.
Ooh, two out of two so far. Jawad, your top step on Sunday.
Let's go a bit different and say Carlos Sainz gets his first F1 win.
Ah, so we're expecting Ferraris currently. I'm gonna make it two each. So Carlos Sainz on the top step. I think, you know, now's a good chance for him to get that first victory. So yeah. The rest of your podium then, please, Tom.
Sorry, my head just ran out of battery. You pick the order, but Max and Perez.
Interesting. Ray, the rest of your podium, please. P2 and P3.
Verstappen and Sainz. I think Sainz in P3, Verstappen P2.
Jawad.
Leclerc and Verstappen, second and third.
So Ferrari 1-2 with Verstappen coming home in P3. I'm going to say Sainz, Leclerc, and then I really want to not say Verstappen.
Say it!
Verstappen, P3.
Thanks, Ruby.
It hurts me so much. Yeah, so how about a bit of a bold prediction now then? So this is, you know, something, well, bold. Is it going to happen? Probably not, but it'll be funny if it does. So Tom, your bold prediction for this weekend, please.
Hamilton scores more than 1 point.
There was a time when that wouldn't have been bold, and I'm really sad.
No, I know. All right, no, go on. I'll give you a real one. Danny Rick gets a point, at least.
That is particularly bold. Ray, your bold prediction, please.
Give me a moment, let me think about this. I have two in my head now. One of it is Mercedes will only have one car in the points, and the other is that Aston Martin scores a point.
Interesting. Jawad, your bold prediction, please.
I will say that we will get rain during the second half of the race.
I mean, you're the Australian person here. Is there something we don't know?
Well, currently there is like a 30% chance of showers in the afternoon next Sunday, but Melbourne weather is about as predictable as going to Monaco and putting going to the casino. So yeah, who knows? I mean, it might not rain at all. It looks pretty good the weather wise for the weekend, but there's always that slight chance we might get a little bit of a drizzle, and you know, that might change up how the end of the race looks. So I'll you know, put that as my bold prediction.
Fair enough. I'm gonna put all 20 runners to finish as my bold prediction, because currently it's been a season of DNFs, really. But yeah, it'll be interesting seeing if we can get 20 cars across that line. But now is a good chance to give you guys an opportunity to promote. So, Tom Downey, you're from Everything F1. You come to us on loan. Give us, you know, what is Everything F1? Where can people find it? /you.
So, me personally, I wouldn't bother. I don't have Twitter or anything. But Everything F1, you can find us across all your socials with the handle at joinEF1. We have our website, everythingf1.com, YouTube channel, Everything F1. Our Facebook page is Everything F1 Paddock. The group is Everything F1 Paddock. And last but by no means least, we have our Everything F1 podcast, which goes out weekly, usually around a Wednesday, where we do race, you know, previews, all that good stuff. But we also have a wide variety of guests, look at news predictions, and generally just lark about a bit. You can find that across all your favorite podcasting platforms. I'm not going to list them because I can't think that fast.
Thank you very much. Ray, the Every Ray Day Motorsport podcast, go and give us something about it.
So, well, you can find me on Twitter at everready, you know, with a double R and A, underscore MSPRT, because Twitter doesn't like me write M Sport. And you can find me on YouTube at everready motorsport. I haven't posted anything this year because I've been a bit busy, but, you know, there'll be things coming soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And people do go and check that out. Jawad, the Hit the Apex podcast. And
So got the Twitter account at Hit the Apex Media. You'll also find a link tree there to all my other stuff as well. And I've just recorded my latest episode today, so that should be out there on the podcast world. A little bit of a preview for next weekend as well. And I'm more looking forward to the reviewing the race the following week, because then I get to tell you all about how much of a good time I had.
And whether it rained in the second half of the race on Sunday, but
that too.
Yeah, I am currently just the host of F1 Grid Talk. But if you want to follow me on socials, it's at Rubes, RUUPEZ. Or any variety of that, depending on what platform already had an account with those tags. But yeah, Grid Talk is available on YouTube, where most episodes are recorded live, as well as Amazon, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Music, Verbal, Omni Studio, and Pocket Casts. There you go, Tom. Just search Formula One Grid Talk for our back catalogue of shows with previews and reactions to qualifying and race results. Please consider supporting the channel on Patreon so we can get mics, lights, and better recording equipment. You can get your hands on some official Grid Talk merchandise on f1chronicle.com/store. Also, make sure you're subscribed so you're the first to know when each new episode is released. We'll be back soon with plenty of more F1 content, and we'll be sticking around on YouTube to answer any questions, maybe discuss some things that we missed. But yeah, thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for joining me, guys.
Pleasure.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And goodbye.